Our next guest. Oh, I've been looking forward to this for a while here. Who do we have on? Robert Hyde?
Yes, we did.
About a few weeks ago,
yes,
right?
Yes, we did.
He's running for the 5th Congressional District, as is our next guest, who also not only running for the 5th Congressional District, but is saying that Johanna Hayes, who currently holds that, according to this, what is this, like a one sheet that you were able to print off of, is that his website?
Yes, I believe so.
It claims that Johanna Hayes is an AOC socialist and votes in donations that she receives prove it. I like this. Wow. I like this little one sheet here this guy's got. You got to check this out. We got to get his website up. We got to tell everybody what his website is. Let's bring him on, though. His name is David X. Sullivan. David X. Good morning, David. How are you, buddy?
I'm well, Gary. How are you?
Not doing too bad. Good morning.
Well, it's nice to always be introed with the name Robert Hyde before me. I had to laugh.
Well, you know, we're trying to figure out how many people are running for this office, you know, because I got to be honest, I hadn't heard of many of the people that actually I didn't even hear much of Robert Hyde until he called us one day and said that he wanted to be on. Sure. And I'm like, but the good news is that by doing so, we're able to put you on the airwaves so that more people can get to know you, be familiar with your name, and understand your platform. And I got to tell you something, David. The more I'm reading about you, at least that with the information that was given to me prior to going on air, the more I like what I'm reading here. So,
well, thank you.
Absolutely. This is an interesting claim, though. Johanna Hayes is an AOC socialist, and you have the votes and donations prove it. Can you expound on that a little bit?
Well, certainly. First and foremost, she'd come in to office less than 2 years ago saying that she would not support Nancy Pelosi for Speaker of the House. And, of course, her first vote was for Nancy Pelosi as Speaker of the House. Since that time, she's voted 100% of the time with Nancy Pelosi. But more interesting, she's voted 95% of the time with Ocasio-Cortez. And she's accepted $35,000 last year.
Wow.
As campaign contributions from AOC.
From AOC?
Munson, a report. Oh, go ahead.
From AOC directly? Oh, my goodness.
Yes, well, apparently she was unaware of that, but apparently there were tweets that would suggest otherwise, thanking Ocasio-Cortez for the money.
Holy, wow. All right.
But that's aside from things. Johanna has also said that she's a proud co-sponsor of the new Green Deal, which is a $93 trillion adventure, a global problem with a unilateral solution, which is no solution at all. India, China, Russia, they're polluting, they're manufacturing, they're doing things that we no longer do in this country. And, if we're going to have a global solution to the environment, it has to be addressed worldwide, not just by American taxpayers, and certainly not by the taxpayers in Connecticut who are suffering enough.
That's, she's not just a Democrat. She's linking herself with the far left facet of the party.
Well, her votes certainly suggest that. What she says and what she does are, I think, really two different things. Coming home to Connecticut, you can talk like a moderate, but go back to Washington and vote like a progressive. And being a progressive is just a nice way of saying socialist.
Well, that's right. We say that all the time. And you bring up a really interesting point that I tell you, it happens even on the state level. There are so many state representatives and state senators who go back to their district and talk out of one side of their mouth. And they sound moderate and, oh, yeah, looking for a bipartisan solution. And they say all the key words that they really should be. And then when they get back up to the Capitol, they're about as partisan and marching with the rest of their party and are anything but bipartisan. So it happens on both levels, the national level and on the state level. You know,
well,
go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
No, please.
I was going to say that's very true. And I think that, running for a federal office, you can't look at what's happening in Connecticut in a vacuum. You can't say, well, the problems in Connecticut are really the problems of the state legislature. Listening to the governor and his state of the state a couple of weeks ago, what I heard was, let's talk happy talk. Let's talk about good mojo. And I think it's very, it's encouraging to be positive, but you also have to be a realist. When you turn around and say, well, let's expand gaming. let's talk told. Let's talk about legalizing marijuana because, gee, Mom, all the kids are doing it. You know, those don't tell me that there are jobs coming into Connecticut. You don't hear people say, when I retire, I'm moving to Connecticut. It's not a state that's friendly for its people right now, and our citizens are suffering for it.
You know, David, there's prosperity that's occurring throughout the nation, you know, except it's not really not resonating here in Connecticut. And you look at our federal delegation in Congress, in U.S. Senate, you got Blumenthal and Murphy, and then, you know, our congressmen, you got Rosa DeLauro and Joe Courtney and John Larson and Johanna Hayes, and they're all Democrat. The entire delegation is Democrat. So,
Gary, you're preaching to the choir. I go through the 41 towns of the 5th congressional districts and tell them the math is simple: 5 + 2 = 1. We do have 5 Democrat congressmen. Mm-hmm. We have 2 Democrat senators, and we have 1 voice representing us, the people of Connecticut, in Washington. And if that voice is moving anywhere, it's moving farther and farther to the left. You know, 4 years ago, Nancy Pelosi was the liberal face of the Democratic Party. And now you look at her and she's the moderate voice of the Democratic Party.
Imagine that.
It's a frightening proposition, but socialism does not work. And it's certainly not going to work in Connecticut. And, you know, the Democrats are frightened right now about the prospects of Bernie Sanders being their nominee.
Can you imagine that?
No, it's really hard to imagine. You know, I've been teaching for many years. I've been teaching at the Yale Law School, trial practice, since 1996. And I've been teaching at the University of New Haven in their graduate national security program, money laundering, terrorist financing, and a few other classes. But one of the things is, you know, we discussed the Espionage Act of 1917. And some of our earliest prosecutions under that act were against socialist organizers. And now we have socialist senators and socialist presidential candidates. And diversity of thought is always healthy in the United States. But it's very interesting to see how far we've come.
So you teach at Yale, is that what you said?
I have been, yes.
I didn't think there were any Republicans that even set foot on the Yale campus. That's incredible.
Don't tell anyone.
All right, so I got a few questions for you that I just come to mind as I'm talking with you. Number one, people would say, does a Republican even have a shot at a federal elected position, considering the names I just mentioned? Are there districts, congressional districts, mind you, that are, you know, I don't know, vulnerable that for some of these candidates is Joe Court? I know we're talking about Johanna Hayes. That's who you'd be going up against. But is Rosa DeLauro, is she a shoo-in? Is Joe Courtney a shoo-in? Is John Larson a shoo-in?
Well, I'll let the people of Connecticut decide who's a shoo-in. I mean, that's why we have an election every 2 years for Congress. But I will say this. 2 years ago, Manny Santos from Meriden, a fine gentleman, just armed and equipped with $70,000, took 44% of the vote.
Wow.
And Johanna Hayes, through the benefit of, you know, friends and Chris Murphy, had $1.5 million. And I think what Manny did with $70,000, taking 44% of the vote, is extremely encouraging. And I think that's why you see so many people interested in running for Congress in Connecticut's 5th District, because I think it is a district where our largest block of voters are unaffiliated voters.
That's
so
true.
As a lawyer with 2 law degrees, you know, I hope to make my case over the next 8 months and convince the people in the 5th Congressional District that we need a different voice in Washington.
All right, let's talk about the 5th Congressional District for a minute here. What is the makeup of it? And break it down with Republicans and Democrats, unaffiliated and independents.
Oh, boy. I can't give you the actual numbers. I can tell you that when you're looking at it, the unaffiliates are the largest voting block as registered voters, mm-hmm. then the Democrats, and then the Republicans. But, you know, you have towns from Fairfield County, Hartford County, Litchfield County, and New Haven County. I mean, this district is really carved up. I put a lot of miles on my car. It's a beautiful, beautiful district. I mean, I was in Sharon last night, and you know, it was light enough that I could really appreciate the countryside, just gorgeous. And then up to Torrington, and you see some really beautiful historic buildings down there.
I agree.
So it really is a nice district, and I think Connecticut has so much to offer, except a horrible tax situation that really it makes people think twice about coming here. I was an assistant U.S. attorney for 30 years. I was talking to a friend of mine in the DEA the other day because we had a mutual friend retire. And I said, well, who's filling the job? And he said, no one's applied yet. I thought, well, nobody's applied in state. He's like, nobody's applied at all.
Wow.
Federal agents don't want to come to Connecticut. Now, when I started 30 years ago, there were waiting lists from agents in federal agencies looking to come to Connecticut. And now everyone recognizes that whether it's the taxes, the housing market, I mean, you name it.
Yeah.
This is not the place that people want to be. And
no, they're
it's really
in fact,
unfortunate.
The contrary, they're moving out. So Johanna Hayes is a former Teacher of the Year here in the state of Connecticut. And
yes.
A couple of years ago, if you remember, she could do no wrong. I mean, she won it pretty handedly. Now that she's got a voting record, though, something that you can exploit and you can show to people that how far left she is, You must feel pretty confident that maybe you can break the cycle. I know Nancy Johnson once had this position as well as a Republican several years ago. What do you do then? I don't expect you to divulge your strategy. I wouldn't want you to do that over the airwaves. But give me just a tidbit of how do you get your message as a Republican out to your to a constituency that's been predominantly voting Democrat in this district?
Well, I mean, I don't think there's any secret to it. I'm not exploiting anyone's voting record. I'm simply bringing it to light. I mean, these are her votes. This is what she chooses to do with this position. And it's a position that of trust. And if you're speaking like a moderate, but voting like a progressive or a socialist, I think that the people of Connecticut and this district have a right to know that. Johanna Hayes has said, well, I'll be happy to debate the Republican nominee after their primary in August, mm-hmm. which is a nice way of saying after Labor Day, because people do leave during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want a primary. We want to come out of this convention in May as the nominee with no primary so we can devote our efforts to raising the funds
yeah.
and getting our message out throughout the 41 towns. Going into each town and talking about the issues. I told the Hartford Courant on July 1st when I filed with the FEC, I'm prepared to discuss the issues with Ms. Hayes anytime, any place, anywhere, starting right now. I feel very strongly about that. I'm very concerned about the future of our children. I'm concerned about the future of our seniors. I'm concerned about just where our state and where our country is going. And it's hard to believe that in this robust economy, Connecticut has no seat at the table. Connecticut has suffered. While the governor can talk about opportunity zones in his state of the state, a little slip. You know, the president talks about it the night before in State of the Union, and the difference is one talks about it and the other one does it. We have seen tax cuts and deregulation mm-hmm. that have been successful for this country with employment numbers. And the numbers don't lie, Gary. They simply don't lie. And,
yeah.
you know, it's one of these situations where I think we need Republican representation in Washington to work with this administration.
Well,
I have no doubt that this president's going to get reelected because the record in 3 years has been really quite spectacular.
Yeah. To that point, though, how would it be? Well, I guess we could only speculate. Being, let's say you win and working with a delegation that's all Democrat, would that be challenging at all?
I don't believe so. I believe in civility of the process. I truly do. You know, I don't. When we use social media, we're very careful about it. I'm not going to attack people personally. I want to talk to everyone about issues, and I don't think anyone should be afraid to express their views in this country. And I think there are people right now that definitely feel that way. And I think that we should have an open dialogue in Washington. And certainly right now, they say the Democrats are the party of impeachment. It's been a tough road in the House of Representatives, clearly, and we're finally getting through that. We have many issues to discuss going forward, whether it's border security, whether it's just national security, whether it's the immigration policies. And it's important to note that we have over over a million people coming into this country every year through our immigration programs. And that's more than any other country in the world. Yeah. We're a great nation. We're a great people. And we need to be reminded of that sometimes. No, we're not perfect. But, we're a lot better than everyone else because it seems everyone wants to come here. There was a time when American imperialism was frowned upon. And yet, while we're not imposing our views and our culture into other countries, it's very clear that still people want to be here and they want freedom. They don't want socialism.
All right. Well, my final question to you, and then we got to take a break, is, listen, anybody is beatable. And I mean anybody is beatable as long as the strategy and the preparation is there. I think some candidates are more vulnerable than others. That I will also admit to. Johanna Hayes, being a freshman, really, she's really in concluding her first term, in my opinion, makes her vulnerable considering the votes that she had taken that you've already mentioned. What can you do then to win that seat? What is the secret sauce? What is the missing ingredient that Republicans have just been striking out on that you are aware of, that you have to obtain, to earn, to win that seat?
Well, I think what we first need to do in the Republican Party is not cannibalize our own. I think we need to get behind a strong candidate. I think we need a well-funded candidate. Sadly, you need money in this process. And as I mentioned, Manny Santos did a tremendous job with $70,000, but he never had the opportunity to get his message across in the same manner that Johanna Hayes did. I think if we're on an even playing field, I think that people would see and recognize differences. When you're talking about Medicare for All, which she supports, that would be jobs in the Farmington Valley. That would be giving 19% of the federal economy to the federal government. And that's frightening. That really is socialism. If you're going to turn over 19% of our economy to the government, look at VA hospitals and see how they're run. I think what we have to do is have candidates that can go toe-to-toe, respectfully, and offer different points of view, and let the people of this district make that decision. And I think the key really is the unaffiliated voters, because I think so many of them don't like to align themselves with a party because it's very polarizing right now.
Yeah, and let me just add one more thing to that, because everything you just said, you hit the nail right on the head. But in specifically to your case, is I would also disseminate the facts. Like you said, facts don't lie. How is Johanna Hayes, what's her image in district? How is she portraying herself in her district? And what is she, how is she really voting in D.C.? Listen, David, I can't thank you enough for being with us. We got to have you back on. Maybe we have you come in studio and answer some questions from callers or whatnot. But we got to spend.
Gary, I would love that.
That would be awesome. Maybe block off a half an hour or 40 minutes of time, and we'll try to get that scheduled sometime in the next month or so. I can't thank you enough for being with us this morning, David.
Well, thank you.